Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Do you make it a point to shop and support locally owned stores and restaurants? Ever make it a point to buy products that are made in your area? Well, this morning we'd like to hear from you as we talk about local economic development in Champaign-Urbana and Danville. Maybe you're a local businessman with a story to tell or just a local consumer. Your comments are welcome as we talk to the heads of two local economic development agencies. Mike Kirchhoff is running a little late, but he'll be with us a little later on in Focus. He's with the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. Right now in the studio with us is Vicki Hogan, and she is president and CEO of Vermilion Advantage, promoting what it calls the Danville Difference on its website. And Vicki, welcome to Focus.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
And I was wondering if I could ask you about these Milken Institute rankings that I talked about before we went to the news, and what they say in showing the relative rankings of Danville and Champaign-Urbana in terms of creating and retaining jobs. And what does it mean as these rankings change from year to year? In the case of Danville, it's lower ranked than Champaign-Urbana, but better than a year ago.
Yes, you know, I think what this report demonstrates this year, based on the items that it measures of where the job growth is coming and wage growth, is that the recession that we've been in since 2008 is really atypical from recessions of the past. And historically, manufacturing, which is over 19% of our base in Vermilion County, is the first to go in and the last to come out. But in fact, that isn't what has happened this time. And in fact, manufacturing stayed fairly steady throughout and has been the first to really pour back out of the recession and be creating new job opportunities. So I think that's one of the reasons why our rankings differed this year and grew. Whereas if you look at typical government or education-based, and I just pulled from the report, you know, Bloomington went down 22 points, Kankakee went down 59 points, Springfield down 57 points. So those economies didn't fare as well as those that have a higher percentage of manufacturing, such as Danville and Terre Haute, Kokomo, Decatur, some of those economies.
And I should note, Bloomington Normal was the highest performing of the Illinois cities. It came in 66, but it had been in 44th place the year before. Terre Haute, Indiana, 77th. They actually improved from 105th. Other cities in the area that are better than Champaign, Champaign-Urbana, Bloomington, Indiana, Springfield. Decatur, Illinois is 115th, just a few numbers below Champaign-Urbana. Kankakee, the Kankakee-Bradley area at 121st places. But the cities that showed improvement among these groups are Danville, Decatur, and Terre Haute. And do they have a common theme? Are these all pretty industrial cities in terms of manufacturing instead of other types of businesses?
They certainly have a high concentration of manufacturing now. Obviously, Terre Haute and Decatur also have an educational influence with the universities that are represented there that we do not have in our economy outside of the community college. But otherwise, yes, there are some real similarities there.
Well, we welcome you to the conversation as well and to join us on air on Focus. Call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we also welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And now I can say hello to Mike Kirchhoff. He's ready to hand me his card. He is the president and CEO of the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. And welcome to Focus. Glad you could make it.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we were just talking about the Milken Institute numbers about how cities do in terms of creating and retaining jobs, and noting that Champaign ranks higher than Danville, but from a year ago, Champaign's ranking has decreased while Danville's has improved. I was wondering if there's any unpacking of those numbers that you could provide.
Well, you know, first of all, with any kind of a ranking, you see variations from year to year. It fluctuates up and down. And so, you know, I don't know that unless I'm seeing a multi-year trend that it's necessarily disconcerting to me, because to some degree it depends on when those numbers are taken. You know, for instance, some time ago I was talking with the Department of Employment Security, and we were talking about a spike in unemployment rates that we saw in Champaign County. And one of the things that we discussed was it really depends on when those numbers are gathered as to are students in town still then or are they gone? And, you know, so timing of when those numbers are gathered is really important.
Well, I tried to make some year-by-year comparisons over the last few years for Champaign-Urbana. If you start in 2007, it looks like the area was at 122nd place. And then it went to 87th, 53rd in 2009, probably its best position. Then 54th in 2010, 93rd in 2011, and then down to 112th last year, and not too far away from where it was in 2007. What happened in 2009 and 2010?
I would love to be able to tell you that, except I've only been here since August. I'm not trying to dodge the question. Let me be more specific. I think if you look at the natural fluctuation that occurs in some of our companies, there's been media coverage recently of a couple of companies that have had downsizing. One of them is a supplier of Caterpillar, for example. And so as their customers have less demand for their product, they may lay some people off temporarily. Those folks may ultimately be called back as market demand improves. And you see that sort of fluctuation and that cycling take place over time as markets change.
Milken Institute reports on the report attached to the rankings notes that many cities that fell in the rankings tended to be dependent on the service sector that seems to describe Champaign-Urbana more than Danville. Mike, I was wondering, Champaign-Urbana certainly has some manufacturing. Could it use more?
Certainly. I think it could use more in particular sectors. I think base manufacturing is not a good fit for Champaign County.
By base manufacturing, you mean?
I'm talking basic manufacturing as opposed to advanced manufacturing, which requires a higher skill level, pays higher wages, and so on. I think from a competitive labor market standpoint, if you look at the wage base that we have already in Champaign County, if you're attracting in companies that are paying a lower wage, you have a harder time competing for labor, and companies know that. So they're not going to come to an area where they're going to be at a competitive disadvantage. The other thing I might mention, too, is as a part of our board retreat we had just recently, the staff took a look at a heat map of the targeted sectors within the county. What are our areas of concentration? It should come as no surprise that our largest area of concentration is government, with the presence of the university. And as the state has been challenged with budget issues, so the university has been challenged by budget issues. Single largest by far sector in Champaign County is government. And so as you see budget challenges and as you see challenges at the university as a result, there's the old saying that, the university gets a cold and the community gets, pneumonia. It's not quite that dramatic, but you understand when your largest sector takes a hit, the rest of the community takes a hit.
We're classifying the U of I as government, but it could also be classified as education. If that was a private school, you wouldn't call it government, would you?
Yeah, if it was a private school, you're absolutely right. It'd be education.
And so which is more useful a way of looking at it, as government or as education?
Well, it's when you consider that it is the University of Illinois, it's a state institution. The employees receive state benefits through state university retirement system and their pensions. It's a government institution.
Mm-hmm. Vicki, the Danville area suffered over the years from a loss of manufacturing jobs. You were just saying that you thought the improvement, according to these figures, was due to a manufacturing recovery. Is that generally the case? What sort of pickup are you seeing in manufacturing jobs now, looking back over the long haul in comparison?
Well, some of the largest growth that we've seen over the last couple of years, and we keep a pretty close handle on this, we are surveying our major employers bimonthly. We do an annual jobs projection survey to know where they are anticipating going in the next 24 months. So we have a lot of different barometers that we watch, and some of the largest growth that we've seen have been in the two divisions of ThyssenKrupp, Watchfire, Alcoa, many of the major national and international names that are advanced manufacturing and have seen their respective sectors grow dramatically. I think when Mike talks about base manufacturing, I don't think any of our communities in the Midwest or certainly in the United States really see what the general public would conjure up in their mind as base manufacturing. You know, all of the reports for
base
the
base manufacturing would be
Very automated, not automated, labor intensive, very manual in nature. You know, advanced manufacturing where manufacturers are doing systems. There's a lot of engineering involved in their growth, and we certainly see that in ours, from software engineering to mechanical and electrical engineering. Those are very large percentages of the workforce base as opposed to what one might consider a traditional general labor.
Okay. Now, so even with some layoffs like what Freightcar America just announced last week, the overall picture looks good as far as which direction it's going.
The overall picture is great. In our last quarterly economic outlook, which includes our 35 majors from manufacturing, logistics, healthcare, and technology service, 84% were looking at steady to rapid growth over the next three quarters, only 9% projecting layoffs, and 69% looking to hire.
So it's not 1970 in Danville again, is it?
It certainly is not.
How far away is Danville from that sort of position?
180 degrees, Jim.
Okay, but it's still better.
Oh, that's what I mean. It's significantly better. We are not the same economy that we were in 1970. We are completely different. One illustration, since we've been talking about manufacturing. I've been associated with the economic development process in Vermilion County, knocking on the door of 31 years now. So I've seen three decades of change, been an active part of that. And back when we opened the doors in 1982, manufacturing was over 34% of our economic base. Today it's 19%. Now, as has been discussed in recent studies from the Manufacturing Institute, recently just from Manpower, this anticipated resurgence of manufacturing across the country, the onshoring, the opportunities that we have for a variety of economic issues is real. And one of the drivers, therefore, is if we can collectively and individually as communities provide the advanced workforce skills from engineering to technology savvy employees to fuel that continued growth, and that is the area where we see it growing.
And that's an exceptionally good point. It is really probably the most critical issue is workforce. As we think about the retirement of the baby boom, and you all, a number of years ago, I had the pleasure of working with Vicki when I was at Illinois Power years ago. So I was going to, if she didn't
mention. We've been around the block a time or two, haven't we?
Once or twice. I'm thinking about how innovative the Danville has been, particularly in regards to workforce and some of the programs that they had with Larry Smith and others years ago and an apprenticeship program approach. One of the challenges we recognized then, and that was what, the 1990s or so?
Late 1990s.
We recognized that we were going to have this huge problem with the retirement of the baby boom generation. Now we've gone through a really challenging economic environment over the course of the last, 5 to 7 years, and the baby boomers have delayed retirement. So if anything, what that's going to do is it's going to exacerbate the problem, because now you've got this big bubble of folks who would have retired, but maybe their pensions, not their pensions, their 401ks were impacted negatively by the housing crisis and drop in stocks and so on. And they couldn't afford to retire. So they put off retiring. So now you've got a much larger bubble that we're going to deal with, and it's going to be a much more significant, much more rapid impact on our companies. And as I look around Champaign County, and we've been out making multiple visits, we reported to the board today that our annual goal is 50. We're going to significantly surpass that in terms of significant employer business retention visits this year. I think we're already we're approaching 40 already. And as I've been on most of those visits and we talk, the focus is an awful lot of our time is focused on talking about workforce. And in a large percentage of the companies that we're talking to, that's their challenge. It's not just that they see it in the future. It's that they already have workforce needs that they can't fill.
Let me get back to that workforce issue in a moment. I want to remind folks that this is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about local economic development with Mike Kirchhoff of the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation and Vicki Hogan of Vermilion Advantage. To join us on the air, call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or you can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. And so getting back to the workforce issue we're talking about is a lack of people or a lack of people with the right training for the jobs that are currently available.
You know, my comment would be the latter. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think it's the amount of warm bodies, to use a crude expression, but it's literally the disconnect between the skill sets that are needed in today's environment, whether you're talking healthcare, manufacturing, or logistics, or government, and what is out there. We've become a much more technical environment in all aspects of employment, and there's a real disconnect on those that are ready to plug in. You know, I think the other challenge, and many of the reports that are out there state this as well, that while maybe in the 90s, early 2000s, where employers were a little more benevolent in spending time and dollars to train employees, for a whole host of reasons today, they expect employees to walk in and in a plug-and-play mode. They don't want to have to spend a lot of time in training, but they want them ready to put in on the job and to be productive. So I think there are all sorts of things that we're discovering that are really exacerbating this disconnect that we're seeing literally across the country and certainly here in Central Illinois.
Mike, in your case, in Champaign-Urbana case, maybe more of a service sector, the university and the hospitals there, they have the same sort of dilemma?
Well, if you looked at just the last Sunday paper, you know, in the News Gazette, there were a tremendous number of display ads for positions open at the university. Just one example. You know, if you talk to anybody in the healthcare industry, they'll tell you CNAs, RNAs, RNs, very much, particularly nursing, is a key shortage in the healthcare industry. When I left Illinois in 2005, went to work in Indiana, and then worked for the last few years in Missouri. And I'm going to tell you, the comment I'm about to make is not reflective of Champaign-Urbana specifically, or for that matter, Illinois. But increasingly what I hear from companies, manufacturers, and whether it's office or information technology, I'm hearing that the issue is, a major issue is soft skills, showing up to work on time, being able to work as part of a team. I don't know what you're seeing, Vicki, if you're seeing the same thing.
Ditto. And you know, to take that a step further, and we're talking whether it's four-year degreed or right out of high school, background checks, the ability to pass a drug test, a whole host of things in
this
soft skill measure. It's a big issue.
Well, what avenues, I'm wondering, are available for employers or for agencies like yours to help with the situation? I know that because I've conducted I've been involved in a couple of what our station holds called community conversations, where we go out and meet with folks in the community and find out what they're thinking. Held a couple in Danville, and the job training issue came up in both of them. It wasn't just with people who might be hiring, which was in the case of with a local leadership group. I was talking with church ministers, and they were noting the same problem.
Right. We have, you know, multiple level approach over in Vermilion County, and as Mike alluded to, have really been building on that since the late 1990s. And I'm very proud of it because, again, of those four economic pillar groups that I referenced, healthcare, manufacturing, logistics, and technology service, collectively now since about 2000, we've been working with a single voice, not only with the K through 12 system, but also the community college system. So as far as entrance into the workforce, there's been a very strong collaborative effort to the tune of, starting this year, our involved employers, which are 65 strong and represent one-third of our entire labor force, have spent $1.4 million assisting in implementing various types of curriculum, be they targeted at adult retraining or coming up through the ranks in STEM-related curriculum to try to enhance everyone's ability to be more prepared for going on for post-secondary and or going into the workforce.
This is stuff before we
before it was in vogue,
and before we get to the a specific skill set of training for a specific job or a specific field. Is this more of the sort of things you hope leads up either to be ready to go for that training or to have perhaps some of the soft skills that you were talking about earlier?
A combination thereof. You know, some of the soft skill training that's provided to our school-age children across the board would be a program in eighth grade that every eighth grader gets because of our clusters called Choices. Character counts, they were providing to the schools until the new PBIS system was mandatory among public education. A lot of focus on math and science-related curriculum. In fact, a pilot that we're doing right now with a Project Lead the Way middle school program called Gateway to Technology, which really engages students at the 6th through 8th grade level in math and science by providing hands-on experiments and opportunities there in automation and robotics and other types of things. But also working with very business-specific, as an example, in the manufacturing arena, since we talked about this, in partnership with all of our high schools and our community college, starting this year, we've launched a three-pronged approach to trying to engage students, but because the curriculum is at the community college, it's dual credit. So while it's targeted at juniors and seniors, it's also applicable to adults in college age. In pre-engineering, in NIMS, which is a national certification for metalworking skills, and in certified production technician, which is a manufacturing skill standards council certified approach. And these are post-secondary, they can be right out of high school, and they can lead to four-year degrees as well.
Mike, does your organization have anything similar working up?
Well, you know, as Vicki was talking, I was thinking about our new workforce education committee that Lori Patterson at PICSO is leading. And we've been doing a deep dive with some of our local employers on what the issues are and how do we resolve those issues, and really kind of from a creative standpoint, in the sense that, you know, workforce development committees have taken on kind of a life of their own in a lot of economic development organizations, and they go on and on and on. And what they're trying to do, it was really interesting to me that at our first meeting, they were talking about an exit strategy and how, you know, when do we know we've accomplished what it is we set out to accomplish? And, you know, so I found that to be a really kind of a creative approach on a part of our chair. But I might, you know, just mention, we've got a lot of really good partners. You've got the Workforce Investment Board. You've got the community college system, and that's great. One of the challenges that we have in terms of employees for manufacturing in particular is we have a mindset among the public, particularly parents, who want their – and there's a mindset to some degree in education. Everybody goes to college, right? I want my kid to go to college. I want my kid to have a better life, and that means they go to college. And that isn't necessarily true. I was listening to a report about somebody was talking about the value of a Harvard MBA. I was listening to talk radio yesterday. And the return on investment time period for that Harvard MBA versus going out and beginning work without an MBA, much less a Harvard MBA, you know, people are beginning to ask, what's that return on investment? Can you have a good job in manufacturing? You know, if I look at some of the jobs that are open here in Champaign County as an example, I mean, you're talking about jobs that pay $50,000 a year. Is that a good living for being able to go in, assuming you've got good soft skills and good basic skills that you can go in and work in a manufacturing environment, which is not 1950s manufacturing? I mean, people assume dirty, old, bad labor conditions, you know, dangerous. And that's just not the case in modern manufacturing today. And so you can have a good life, you can have a good salary, you can work in a good environment. But the perception, I don't know, is accurate with reality. The perception is still rooted in the past.
I think a lot of people are thinking that they need that college degree just to get through the door with an employer, just to be considered.
Well, the question is it a four-year college degree or is it a two-year degree? You know, there's I think a much broader application for associate's degrees today, in terms of variety of opportunities.
Yeah, I would certainly agree, and you know, also I think maybe one of the points as a society that we miss anymore because things have changed so much is that Whether you're coming out with 1 or 2 years of college, a certification, or you're in a four-year track, it doesn't matter anymore, because what really drives success is lifelong learning. Mm-hmm. In reality, no one who can be successful in this day and age, because of all of the changes in technology and just application of teamwork in the environment, can be successful if they don't continue to learn.
Well, it's time for a short break, and we'll be back with more about local economic development issues with Mike Kirchhoff and Vicki Hogan. This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Our topic today is local economic development on Focus and the efforts to promote business and job expansion in Champaign-Urbana and Danville in particular. And with us today are the president and CEOs of two local economic development agencies, Vicki Hogan of Vermilion Advantage, long time with that organization, and Mike Kirchhoff, relatively new over at the helm of the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. We welcome you to the conversation this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You know, at the beginning of the show, I was asking listeners if they make it a point to try to buy local, at locally owned stores, or if they buy locally made products. And I was wondering, when I think about that, does that make a difference to a local economy if people are mindful about that? And how can you tell if it does?
Oh, absolutely. It makes a big difference. You know, I don't think most people, and I don't know what the percentages are over here in Champaign County, but in Vermilion County, retail sales accounts for 16% of the county's general revenue fund and 60% of the city of Danville. So it is a very important component to providing the services that are required.
Well, that would be, say, an argument for shopping inside Danville rather than out of town. Does it make a difference if you shop at a locally owned store rather than a chain store?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Absolutely. I mean, you think about locally owned businesses in particular, vis-a-vis chain stores. A chain store is headquartered elsewhere outside the community, generally speaking. Although in our case, that's not true with Jimmy John's. Jimmy John's is headquartered here by lots of sub sandwiches, because that money all comes to Champaign-Urbana. Generally speaking, chain stores are located outside the community. And so the revenue generated by those sales are going outside the community. If you think about, you know, a locally owned business, in vernacular mom and pops type store, you know, they're the ones that are supporting the local soccer team. They're the ones that are supporting local not-for-profit organizations. Maybe they're involved in Rotary or something of that nature. Maybe they're, if you think about in the case of our local manufacturer, Shad Khan, and look at the investments that Shad Khan and his family have made in Champaign-Urbana, and I'm thinking particularly about the library and the money that they've put back into the community in that way. I mean, yes, it's a manufacturer. It's not retail. You can't go in and buy a bumper, you know, from the company. But at the same time, you know, locally owned businesses, locally headquartered businesses in any sector are the ones that are reinvesting back in the community.
I'm thinking of the mixed messages here, because I know that Kohl's just opened in Danville. It's part of, I guess, a whole bunch of new retail coming up on the north end of town. And these are, for the most part, are chain stores. And I gather you're happy to see them. You were telling me before we went on the air that Kohl's seems to be having a very good opening few days.
Oh, they've had a tremendous week, yes. And absolutely. And you know, Jim, like anything, I don't think the conversation here is mutually exclusive mm-hmm. to one area or another. It really takes both to make the retail sector successful, I believe. And so when I think shop local, I think about those that are there in your community, be they a national chain or a locally owned ma and pa restaurant or store, because they all generate property tax, they all employ people and have payrolls, they all generate sales tax. So they're very important, and certainly encouraging and supporting the entrepreneurial spirit is important. But I think that they're both very important to a viable local service economy.
Yeah, and you know, to reinforce that point, chain stores are also supporting a lot of the positive aspects in the community. One thing we have to recognize with retail, In some number one, it is the primary generator of revenue to local governments, but it's also a significant contributor to quality of life mm-hmm. in the community. Without an adequate or an exceptional retail sector, you know, folks that are looking at moving into the community, be they professors at the university or employees of a local manufacturing firm being recruited into the community, it's a quality of life issue. Do I have to leave the community to shop? Do I have to travel to shop? Can I buy what I need locally? And so from that sense, it's absolutely critical that a community have a good, strong retail environment. I think that where we get into a challenge with retail is where it's retail to the exclusion of other sectors. I mean, economic development is important from a balanced approach. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've seen in some smaller communities is that have focused on primarily retail is if the bulk of jobs that are being created are created in the retail sector, these are typically jobs that are part-time, they're not paying a living wage, they're not providing benefits. And you look at the back-end statistics in the community and you say, okay, well, if you've got a spike in retail and you're not growing other sectors of your economy, what else is going on in the community? And one community I'm thinking of here in Illinois, I won't name, but I looked at their numbers. And while they were having dramatic increase in sales tax revenue from retail, they were also having a dramatic spike in free and reduced lunches in their school system. And this particular community transitioned from a strong manufacturing sector to a much smaller manufacturing sector with a heavy retail component instead taking its place.
That raises the question as to what sort of jobs can retail generate? And I mean, what's the potential for jobs, and as far as jobs that you can support a family on?
But there's the management jobs that go mm-hmm. with each of those facilities. There's the maintenance jobs, and we have to remember that it also provides an outlet for students to begin to enter
Absolutely.
The workforce. I mean, fast food can't support that in its entirety. It also supports older folks who have retired but want to augment their income, perhaps a stay-at-home mom or dad that want part-time income. So I think it fills a very important niche in an overall, and Mike said it best, balanced economy, and I think that's what we've been after. One of the reasons we're just tickled to see the success that we're recognizing right now in the retail growth on North Vermilion Street is that it recaptures leakage. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it will recapture it in large part from dollars that are spent over here, but that's very important to a local economy as well. That we have, because once people leave a trade area, they're going to do other things as they exit it. So they're going to eat over here. They may shop for groceries over here if they leave. And now, you know, we are beginning to balance that sector of our economic base as well, so that we can be a net importer in some of these, as Champaign-Urbana is, and that's very important.
Well, and in that sense, I might add, I mean, I'm ecstatic for Danville that this is taking place, because a growth in the retail sector like they've seen is an indication that it's a strong economy.
Right.
And so that's a positive sign for Danville. And while we both run economic development organizations focusing on our communities, and in that sense we're competitors, regionally we're close enough that it's important that both communities be successful, both, you know, both Champaign County and Vermilion County be successful. And so if they're challenged and, you know, there's not a growth in the retail sector and manufacturing is dropping, as you described earlier, that's a challenge for the region. It's not just a challenge for Vermilion County. So the fact that they've had this progress, we were really excited to see that was taking place in Danville. You know, rising tide lifts all boats. And if we're both
That's
successful,
right. That's right.
Then it's to both of our best interests.
I wanted to ask about your particular agencies now, because we're talking about economic development, both the Champaign County EDC and the Vermilion Advantage are devoted to promoting economic development. But how do you do it? What sort of tools do you have to work with to help make that happen?
Well, you may have noticed just recently we hosted our, I think it was our 8th Innovation Celebration just took place. And that's to recognize, particularly in the small business sector and with a heavy emphasis on information technology, emerging companies that are really making an impact on the community. And there's a variety of categories for which awards are given. One of them in particular that comes to mind for me is a company here locally called Oso Technologies, and they won the award for student Innovation. And it's a new company that's been created, relatively new company that's been was created by students out of the University of Illinois. And if you have plants in your home, you buy sensors for your plants, and there's some other equipment associated with it. But basically, your plant texts you and says, "Hey, I'm thirsty," and it's really kind of an interesting technology, So there's that kind of innovation that's taking place in the community, and our technology committee works to promote that. And we work in partnership with Enterprise Works, the incubator and research park at the university, to promote that. In addition, we've got entrepreneurial efforts that are taking place up in Rantoul, and we're working with the city of Rantoul on those things as well. Beyond that, we're working with prospective companies, and we're doing a lot of existing business visitation as well. I mean, really, ultimately, what I'm talking about is the three-legged stool of economic development. It's entrepreneurship, it's business attraction, and it's business retention and expansion.
And for Vermilion Advantage, Vicki, can you tell me something about the work you do?
Sure. We're a little bit of a hybrid. We started out in 1982 as a traditional public-private partnership in economic development, and fast forward to 2002, approached the former Chamber of Commerce and really decided that at that point in time, for a county of 81,000 people, that we needed to wipe the slate clean and really start fresh on having a single organization that could address the needs of all business, work with our municipalities, and look forward into trying to create the future. And that's what Vermilion Advantage is today. We have several different components. We work very strongly with all of our business base throughout Vermilion County. I have a 73-member board of directors, which is the head of all the majors, many smalls, county and citywide education, banking, and the like, so that we have a strong and balanced governance to be our eyes and ears out into the community, as well as the one-on-one that we have. We operate a leadership program trying to build leaders for tomorrow, and our workforce development initiative with the four clusters I mentioned could really be a standalone. It's really a budget within our budget. It's a very aggressive effort. We work with every school in Vermilion County. We have programs that go from elementary through post-secondary. So we're very different than a traditional economic development organization.
What's the role of local governments in promoting economic development? I know that in Urbana, they just had a Democratic mayoral primary where the challenger was critical of what the mayor had done in essentially efforts for economic development, whether or not the city council had taken the right steps in working with a hotel developer, or whether plans to beautify the Boneyard Creek area through downtown are by themselves a good way to promote business. I know when things come up that involve cities spending money, questions arise. What's the role that's most effective that that governments can play?
You know, I think that varies around the country. If you look at the structure of economic development organizations around the country, you've got public-private partnerships, which is, you know, Vicki's group is a public-private partnership. Our organization is a public-private partnership. I think something on the order of about 35% of economic development groups are organized that way. Some of them are organized as private only. Some of them are organized as public only. But for me, the most effective approach is the public-private partnership. Number one, it leverages private sector investment, where if it was public only, the private sector, I'm sure, feels that they already give enough money to the government, and so we wouldn't have that investment coming from the private sector. But you also have the interest of business represented at the table and their input and guidance and direction in terms of the process, and at the same time, public policy folks around the table who are generally the entities that control incentives within the community. And so you're able to balance the benefits of both sides of the house in a public-private partnership. In our case, our organization, our total budget is $600,000, and we have a subsidiary small business development center. We're adding an international trade center as well this year. The core budget, though, is about $280,000, and that's non-grant funded, non-SBDC money. And that money, roughly 72% of that $280,000, is from the public sector, from the University of Illinois, Champaign County, the City of Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, Mahomet, and others, Savoy, and others. And we've discussed, you know, do we need some additional resources? Where would those resources come from? We'd like to strengthen the representation of the private sector, as opposed to 70-something board members. I think ours are in the neighborhood of 35. And so, but these organizations are not the same from community to community anywhere in the country. There's just no cookie cutter approach.
Can we point to something that's happening in the community today, whether it's Champaign, Urbana, and Danville, and say that would not have happened without local government stepping in?
Oh, absolutely. And what you just alluded to, at least from our perspective, is that development taking place on North Vermilion Street right now. We needed to get an economic shot that would bring a national name that would then start the snowball effect of continued investment in helping to fill those leakage voids. And so when the city of Danville stepped forward and acquired the former Kay's Merchandise Mart site for the developer of what's Kohl's and now TJ Maxx and now Meijer right beside it, which is a private development. Their purchase wasn't involved in that. But it's one of those things that if Kohl's weren't there, then Meijer wouldn't be locating right next door to them. So that investment netted significant revenue return that has resulted in the additional development that will be around that. And Jim, I think that's where communities have to strike a balance. They have to look. It's not a cookie-cutter approach, but when we are looking, whether it's state or local, public sector dollars to be involved in economic development projects, you really need to look at the payback and what you're getting and the equity of it. It's something that has to be given serious consideration. But in the environment in which we live today, it can be a critical component to establishing a rate of growth.
Yeah, and it's not just about the dollars, Jim, too. It's also about action on behalf of business on the part of local government. So when we make a business retention visit here in the community, we always have a representative from the community in which the business is located at the table as a part of that discussion. And they're actively involved in working with us on technical assistance projects to address issues that the companies raise, to resolve those issues on behalf of the companies.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. We're talking with Vicki Hogan of Vermilion Advantage and Mike Kirchhoff of the Champaign County Economic Development Council Corporation as we talk about commerce, industry, and jobs in East Central Illinois. Don't have a link right now with my technical director, but I think I have a phone call available, so I'm going to go to it. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Yes, some time ago you raised the question of chain stores versus local businesses. It seems to me an even more detrimental influence today is the Internet, which has a tremendous advantage by evading sales taxes entirely. And in certain segments of the market, it's essentially driven everything else out. For instance, the local camera stores are gone.
That's something that does come to mind, unless you have one of those businesses in your town generating Internet sales. Is that a new problem in the last few years for brick-and-mortar stores?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. For smaller communities, but all communities, I think some of the dynamics that are really changing the retail platform completely, and at the top of the list is Internet purchasing, particularly with the newer generation that's very comfortable with that, and that's just how they do things in general right now. On the other side of that, you've got an aging society. You've got unpredictable gas prices to where you've got a less discretionary time, so between that and gas prices, going on shopping trips isn't necessarily something that's done on a regular basis. It's not a form of entertainment because we generally don't have the time for a lot of that. So there are a lot of different dynamics that I think are changing the face of retail completely.
Yeah, and that sales tax capture has been an issue that many government agencies have wrangled with. You know, when you think about it from a business perspective, if I'm doing business on the Internet and selling products, I have to know if I'm going to charge the appropriate sales tax at the local level and state level. Now I have to have virtually a book of all those sales tax rates, and it becomes somewhat cumbersome in order to be able to charge that sales tax. That's been behind a lot of this national debate. So how do you address that problem and do it in a way that businesses can comply and at the same time communities aren't hurt by those sales on the internet. And, you know, this discussion has been going on recently at the federal level.
I know that there have been talked of a streamlined sales tax system across the country. And Senator Dick Durbin recently introduced, I guess it was a new version of his legislation, trying to speed up the establishment of that. I've heard from at least trade groups for internet retailers, and some internet retailers have gone on record saying that they could support some version of this. It doesn't sound like, but you should tell me, is there any strategy you have right now at a local level to deal with this on behalf of your brick and mortar retailers?
No strategy at the local level, because it really has to be enforced and implemented with legislation at the state or the federal level.
Yep.
And I think the system that's out there now, as I understand it, is basically an honor system.
Yeah.
If you do or don't report what you've done as far as purchasing on the internet.
But while setting up something like that would be helpful for governments that receive sales taxes, it doesn't really solve the question for brick-and-mortar retailers, does it?
No, but the challenge that you have at the local level is you don't know which of those online organizations people in your community are buying from. I mean, you have no way to track that, no way to know necessarily. And so you're formulating a strategy to, you know, contact those organizations and work with them, or you know, fair pricing or fair tax collection or something like that. It's just sort of out of the realm of possibility. That's why I think that the state level and the federal level effort is so much more valuable. Chambers of Commerce for years have promoted, you know, kind of shop local campaigns, and the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce has did that just this last Christmas season as well. You know, they had Small Business Saturday as an example, shop local during the Christmas season.
There would be some things there where the equity in the sales taxes would make a difference for a local retailer if they knew that that the online equivalent of whatever they were selling also had a sales tax or a use tax attached to it.
If there was a parity.
Right. I totally agree with that.
I think you also have to consider the effect on the local tax base.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, again, when you consider that most of the tax revenue to municipalities is coming from sales taxes.
And they're not going to benefit from that internet sales tax if such one exists.
Why would not?
Well, would it if the buyer is in their town, would they get a
piece
of it?
It would come back locally,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, that would be my expectation.
Right, that's some of the discussion of how it would be set up, is that it would be no different than if I go to Chicago and buy something and I have it shipped to my house, the sales tax rate that I am charged is the local rate and goes back to that local economy.
Okay, so maybe the only thing missing then would be the jobs at the brick-and-mortar store that used to be there would provide.
And the property tax that's created by the value of the facility.
Yeah, and when you think about parity, I mean, yes, you've then got parity in sales tax charges, but the other question for the consumer buying online then becomes a question of variety of product and choice. Mm-hmm. And there's no way for us to get to parity with that. You're still going to have a wide variety of choice, more so than you would have on a store shelf, just because it's impractical to stock that wide an array of merchandise.
Sure, and it's also satisfying a broad spectrum of demographics. You know, there are some folks and some types of products that you just need to see, feel, and touch prior to. You can shop online, if you will. You can see what the options are, but then when you're really ready to tender that purchase, you want to go see, feel, and touch.
We're in just about the last minute of our program here, and I did want to give each of you a chance to say something. If I ask you, what's coming up next? What are you most excited or optimistic about in your areas in terms of economic development? Mike, I'll let you go first.
Well, again, as I mentioned earlier, we just came out of a board retreat with our board of directors. I think that the direction that we're headed, some of the excitement I see around the table, is exciting for me personally. I think our opportunities really lie in advanced manufacturing, and in the information technology. I see opportunities in the biosciences as well, particularly with the concentration of healthcare here in the community.
Vicki?
Yeah, what I'm excited about is the momentum we have going really in multiple sectors right now. We've got growth in healthcare. We have growth in retail. We see growth in a majority of our manufacturing base. And as a result of that, what we're seeing is not only new professionals coming into the area, literally from all over the globe, but also a significant increase in returning college grads to take some of those professional and technical positions. And I think this is an exciting trend for a small rural metro area.
Well, let's hope the excitement continues. Mike Kirchhoff is president and CEO of the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. Vicki Hogan holds the same job at Vermilion Advantage. Thank you both for being with us today on Focus.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
We welcome any additional comments you have today on our program, today about today's program. On our website, you can go to it directly at will.illinois.edu/focus, or we're likely the first result on your search engine under WILL Focus. Tomorrow on Focus, bats. Several of the bat species found in Illinois are threatened by a disease called white nose syndrome. I'll be talking with ecologist Ed Heskey from the Illinois Natural History Survey about the role bats play in our ecosystem and how white nose syndrome is our problem too. That's on tomorrow's Focus. Today's show produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director, and handles your calls. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.